Ladies and gentlemen, do we have a treat for you today?
A really special treat. You know, Kristen and I have said many times that we like a throuple. So we invited a really good one to come on the Create Podcast and be a throuple with us. And we're inviting all of you to watch and listen.
So say hello to Alicia Reiner. Yes?
Yes! Woo! Well done!
You may know her as Fig on Orange is the New Black, or Kiki on The Deuce, or Sunny on Better Things, or some other fun role, but she is also an actress and co-creator of films like Equity and Egg, and a co-creator of humans like Leva. Is that your little?
Yeah.
That's her girl's name.
Oh.
And she's also a member of, you guys are going to love this, Resistance Revival Chorus, where they sing as an act of protest because joy is an act of resistance.
You guys have to come to a show.
I'm dying.
I don't know why I've never been to a show yet.
Oh my God, yeah. It's
that's exciting.
So this is amazing. She's to create art of all kinds, tell stories that awaken more love and compassion on the planet, as well as being an activist and a champion for the environment, women's rights, incarcerated women, and undocumented women and children. And don't you just want her to be president?
Yes, please. We are so glad that you are here. We can't
So happy to play with you.
So, I mean, we are such a fan of you, and it was so cute for us when you said you're a fan of us, and we're like, well, let's all be friends.
Let's all be friends. And I send your podcast to so many people. Like, it's whenever anyone like is having anything going on, both positive and negative. They're like, if someone's like, I'm in a car for a long time, what should I do? I'm like, listen to this. Or if like, I just broke up with my boyfriend, or I'm having an artist block or whatever, I'm like, listen to this. Like, if you ever listen to Chris Rock talk about Tussin, put a little Tussin on it.
No.
Chris Rock had this thing that his mama, no matter what was going on, the answer was Robitussin. And it's like, oh, put a little Tussin on it. Like, I have a cut. Put a little Tussin on it. My heart hurts. Have a little Tussin. My stomach hurts. Put a little Tussin on it. Like, so you're my Tussin.
We're the Tussin.
We're like Tussin twins.
Hashtag
Tussin twins. There you go.
I love it. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the Create Podcast. This is so exciting. And I know that so many of our listeners are artists or have desires to express the art that they have inside of them. And you've listened to the podcast, so you know that we say everyone is an artist. Like, the way you raise your kids is art. You know, the way you create anything in your life is art. But I can imagine that a lot of people listening to your bio and how we introduced you are thinking to themselves, like, if only I could get there. And I always think a really interesting conversation that we have all the time with everyone we meet is how there really is no there, and all of your blocks and stuff and joy follows you no matter where you get in your career or how your career goes. So would you mind diving in and like giving us your perspective on that?
Oh, sure. You know, there certainly 100% is no there. And no matter what has happened in my career, there's always another there. And so one of the reasons I listen weekly to you guys is to remember that the there is here. Mm. And that there is, it's like there is no spoon from the Matrix. That all we have is this moment and finding the joy and the play and the playground of this moment. And, which is like, you guys will appreciate, I just started taking playground classes. Do you know this? Have you guys been to Switch Playground?
No.
I'm going immediately.
Everything.
Okay, so as soon as you guys are back, we'll go to Switch Playground together, because there's these new classes called like playground classes, and you're going to different stations, and like it's supposed to be more playful, and that to me is like the good workout is the playful workout, you know.
This is everything we've been talking about. We've been having this conversation about how we're constantly on vacation, but also what keeps coming in so strong for us is getting away from achievement and just into play.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's scary. It's so scary getting away from, especially you like rocked my world and broke me with last week's podcast with like, with the idea of working so hard is ego, because I have huge esteem in like, I worked very hard to get here. It's never been easy. It's never been like, boom, magic. And that esteem, what I realized last week was like, oh, that's your ego, you know? And we don't want to admit it's our ego. We want to be like, oh, no. Like, that's me. That's like a positive thing that I work really hard and it's not easy. And to flip that on its ear and go, it's okay if it's easy.
It's okay if it's easy.
My truth, if you ask like my journey, the story I've told for so long is I am blessed and I am lucky and it's abundant and I am fortunate and I work my fucking ass off. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's time for this next phase to deconstruct that I have to work so hard. And actually, like, that feels so scary, but so delicious and like an awesome challenge. And like you talked about it, like, make the challenge letting go of, I have to work so hard.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
And I'm really curious about your journey, where it began, how when you realized you're an artist, when you started following your path.
And also how
About your spiritual journey as well as your artistic.
Sure. So I grew up in Manhattan and my parents got divorced when I was 8. And my aunt said when I was even younger than that, she like took me one afternoon and we were on the crosstown bus. And she said, what do you want to do when you grow up? And I said, you know, I want to act and paint and dance, you know, dabble. And that like really was my like childhood core. And then, you know, a lot of sort of what I say, the darkness came, like the divorce happened. And like, I like to say I went dark. A lot of stuff happened. I like my parents got divorced. I felt deeply unpopular. I was the fat kid. I was teased a lot. I was bullied. I got an eating disorder. Like it was, there was some darkness. I was depressed. I had anxiety. And there were some bright moments. My second mom came into my life and saved my life, really. My dad's second wife, and who is still my mommy, you know, even though she's no longer married to my dad. And I found recovery from my eating disorder when I was like 19. And then I like sort of learned to be a kid again and learn these spiritual tools. And I wrote my college essays about how psychoneurobiochemistry and acting were really the same thing. They were both like the study of human behavior and who we are and why we are from two very different perspectives. And I was a biopsych major at Vassar and was going to sort of go in that science place until I found out I had a tumor in my, so my junior year, I took abroad. So I overloaded my courses in science so I could take a junior year abroad and study only theater. I studied in London and I studied at the Eugene O'Neill at NTI. Amazing year, like, so much fun and play, joy. And got a lot of like, wow, you could do this. And then came back and found out I had a tumor and had a week of not knowing whether I had cancer or not. And that was when I was like, okay, I'm going to go do this. And then and then like got a job, sort of a couple, got my equity card like before I even graduated school doing Shakespeare in Vermont. Met my husband there, which was so not my plan. Did not want to get married young. Did not want to marry an actor. Did not want to marry someone in debt. And like, and I was broke, but you know, love happens, and I'm still madly in love with him. He's like the most amazing human. And then it was hard again. Like, and then I was like, oh my God, this is going to be so easy. I got my equity card and it's going to be so easy. And then it got really hard again. And I could not get arrested. I could not get an agent. I could not get a manager. I could not, get a job. And is how it felt. Now, years later, I'm like, oh, by the time I was 28, I was shooting a pilot, which is kind of amazing, you know, but in those early years from like 22 to 28, it felt like it was super painful.
And right. It felt like forever, I bet, during that time.
And I'm like, totally forever.
And then looking back, you're like, oh, that's actually pretty fast.
Now, like, I'm like, oh yeah, it's an interesting thing, that time thing and looking back. You know, quite honestly, he had everything came very, very fast for him. He got the agent and the manager and started doing off-Broadway and, booking pilots, and like everything was super fast. And that year that I did my first pilot, he also did a pilot, and mine didn't go, his did go. We moved to LA. We then have been sort of back and forth ever since. But for many, many years, even after that, he was on series for like over 10 years. He went from series to series to series to series, never stopped working. And I would get like a job and a pause and a job and a pause, you know, and I, in that time, learned to create my own work. Don't wait, create. And, the first little movie I made was like a little short, and then I made Equity, and then I made Egg was more recent, but, I would always play, like, I read The Artist Way and was part of an Artist Way group, and how do we keep the play going, and the joy going, and the spirit going, especially in LA for me, that I needed more spiritual grounding in LA. And I had fear about having a baby, like massive fear about it. And then our dog walker is coming in, I think. coming in, Ozzy. Hi, come on. There you go. my puppy is afraid of, he's such a sweet little boy, but Ozzy's amazing. And Ozzy has many big dogs and a little bit of little dogs. And he gets a little afraid of the big dogs. Don't we all know that feeling?
But he still shows up.
But he shows up.
He goes on his walk.
And he actually loves it once he's with them.
Of course.
He always has that, oh, I have to go play with the big boys. It's a little scary.
Yeah. It never goes away.
Yeah. All right, see you soon. Okay, thanks, Ozzy. So I would play and create, and then it's been really interesting since Orange happened, because that was like a game changer, you know. And
was there an audition for Orange? What was that process
there
like?
Was. I first auditioned to play Alex, Laura Prepon's role, and I knew the casting director from ages ago and loved her very much. And it was for, the first audition was for Genji and Michael, who is one of the exec producers. And I was actually told, like, they don't like to chat, so don't chat with them. And then I did the audition. I felt good about it. And I did, like, the thing that you're not supposed to do of, like, I just have to tell it, like, even though I couldn't help it. And I said, I just have to say, I love your work so much. And you know, Weeds is incredible, but the Tracy Ullman show, like, I grew up on, and I love so much. And then she really opened up and she said, oh, I love that job so much. Tracy was incredible, and we didn't have to work so hard. It was like, it was the best room because we got so much done. I mean, and the brilliance of that show, but we would drink wine, like we would drink red wine on show nights. And it was like, it sounded like the most delightful experience.
Yeah.
I said, well, when we're on set together, I'll bring some red wine. And then I walked out and I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I said that. And the only other times I said that was actually that first pilot I booked, where I was like, I'll see you on set. And then I didn't get it. And I was devastated. And then I auditioned to play Polly, her best friend, and I didn't get it. And then they offered me Fig. And when they first offered it to me, it was like two lines. And it said, you know, possible recurring. And I was just so excited because it was one of the best pilots I had ever read. And then, you know, it blossomed.
Wow. And can you talk about, you know, you said, you know, to get so close and then not get it and that devastation, what kind of is your process of getting through that when that comes up for you? Because I know a lot of people listening can't figure out how to stay in the game when faced with those kinds of things on repeat.
I think a huge piece of it is simply practice. It's practicing letting go and having lots of tools in your toolkit that you use different tools different times depending on how your spirit is that day and what your soul needs that day. For me, for today, if I'm waiting, you know, there used to be a time if I was waiting, I tried to like totally forget about it and pretend it wasn't there. Like for today, this particular day, there's one project that I auditioned for, like, our, I guess, Monday. And I don't think about it much, except when, like, I'm in a joy state and I'm in a service state. So I'm like, oh, like when I was in my spin class today, and I can't remember, she said something about, like, what are you using the class to, like, inspire you in your life. And I was, you know, and thinking about that, a joyful thing. And I was like, yes, it would be so fun to tell this story. And I feel it's a project that I feel deeply about because I want to serve this story.
Like, yeah.
It's a beautiful, important story in this moment. It's actually about immigration. And so it's like, universe, if it's your will, I love to tell the story, but it's a light. It's not I'm attached to it. It's like, I only touch it if I'm coming from a joy place.
Right.
And then I say, like, if it that or whatever, better, you know? And I,
right. And that feels more like the energy of devotion and love than the energy of attachment, which is where it's
exactly. And I, for me, it's about love and service. May I be of love and service to stories. Like, that's my job, is like, how do I serve stories? And saying to the universe, like, universe, show me what stories you want me to tell. And not waiting for the someone to give me an audition, but like actively seeking out like what stories can I tell without waiting for the business to tell me what stories I can tell. Yes. So it's important for me to always have that going on so I don't get too attached to whatever comes from the business side, if that makes sense.
Wow. Can we talk about the first time you made your own project? And I love what you were saying before about the pause. You'd always have this pause. And it seems like in hearing your story, that pause actually was a gift. It became very, it was like a necessary pause for the creator in you to come forward. And I'm so curious about the first time you got an idea that you wanted to step forward and what that process was like.
So I just want to say, in like full disclosure, honesty, I didn't want to create my own work. I was actually, there was a definite 5-year-old temper tantrum. I don't want to have to make my own work. I don't like it. I want everyone to give it to me. It's not fair. Like,
yes.
For a long time. And I just need to like own that little girl. It's okay, little girl.
Oh.
Because she's still a little part of me and she can still talk sometimes, but most of the time now, like I have a call after this about a project I initiated with a network and like now it's like, oh, I get to play in the playground. You know, now creating my own work feels empowering and joyful and it's a totally different energy than that little girl. But I have to like honor her because she can still feel like it's not fair sometimes. That it's not fair that I have to do this as opposed to like I get to do this.
Yes. That's right. Yes.
And so the first time it happened, my dad had prostate cancer that mutated and spread without anybody knowing, and he passed very, very quickly. So he had prostate cancer. They thought it was gone. He was fine for many years. And then all of a sudden, he actually came to LA to see me in a beautiful play that I was doing. And while he was there, he was like, oh, my back hurts a little bit. And he came back to New York. Like, and I sent him to like my massage therapist and he went back to New York and in 10 days he was gone.
Wow.
He was 55. Oh. And so I like the minute the play wrapped, I came back and slept in his hospital room for, you know, 10 days and it was like over. And not only like, so the grief was a very different kind of grief, than I had ever felt before because it was this sped up experience and how people handled grief and loss and death and, mortality was fascinating to me, how people were afraid of me, how like, people were afraid to talk about it, how like walking through grief in such a deep way. There was so much to unpack there and it felt like people were just unable to talk about grief and loss. And that was the first time I was called to tell a story because I was like, I feel like I need to do something about our society's inability to talk about grief and loss, and I don't know what to do, and the only tools I have are being a storyteller.
Yeah. So,
and I had a dream one night about what ended up being this film, and I woke up, Dave, and I was like, I have to make this movie.
Mm.
It was like out of a, like I need to do this to be of service. And then I found a writer and found a director and found a producer and we made this short film called Speed Grieving about an efficiency expert who goes through a scientific experiment where you can go through the entire grief process in 10 minutes. And I'll find a link for you in the Sunday.
Yeah, that sounds amazing.
And also I love what you said about it was like there was a need that arose, like outside of you. And then you just brought whatever talent you happen to have to that need. Because I think so many people listening might say, well, I'm not an actor, or I'm not in anything, or I, like, what could I, there's this misperception of I can't do anything. But if you feel deeply connected to a need as it arrives, whether it's the environment or immigration or like all these ways that there are opportunities to be part of a need and healing that need, that everyone has their own thing to bring to it. And nothing is too great or too small. It's just about the passion to move towards it.
100%. And I would say, like, were I an app developer, I would have developed an app about bringing people together who are grieving. Do you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. we all have different tools and, To that end, one of the organizations I'm super involved with right now is Action Potluck. And it was started after the election when this woman, Tara Geer, just felt like, oh my God, what do we do about all of these people coming in, all of these undocumented people who are seeking asylum and don't have family here? And she's like, okay, we'll create these pods that basically become little communities, that become families to these two undocumented people coming in. So for example, me and a bunch of my friends created a pod, and we adopted a family, like a mom and five kids. And we, like, our group, what we decided to do is there were different captains. So one person is the captain of health, and they got everybody to do, like, covered under Medicare and helps, like, got them to the emergency room and got them to, because they got MRSA in the detention center, and like an eye doctor. The mama couldn't see, had never worn glasses in her life, but couldn't really see. And one of them was the school captain, and she's great with school, knows a lot about schools. So she got them all enrolled in a bilingual public school. And I was the housing captain, and I found them, you guys are Upper West Siders, so you'll appreciate this, a 4-bedroom apartment on 103rd Street for $1,300.
What? Yeah. That's a miracle.
That is, yeah.
That is a special skill that should be on your resume.
That's like, you go like this.
Yes.
You do your work, and I do. And I'm like, oh, I did really work hard. But then, like, it, you know, it, like,
yes,
you lift, you, and you do your work, and then it, divine happens.
Yeah. The divine works through you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was my first piece of art that I made. And then I worked with 10 grief counselors and social workers from the cancer support community to create a discussion guide, like a PowerPoint that goes with it. And we made like a journal that goes with it. And then it's used in like grief counseling centers, like the cancer support centers all over the country, and hospitals and hospices, as a grief counseling tool and like an art therapy tool.
Wow.
And then we like also went to festivals and stuff like that.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Gorgeous. I love how your creativity takes the form of, whether it's being an actress or a mother or creating your own work, but also in the realm of giving back, that you bring so much creativity in being of service.
It, I mean, that's, I remember when I was a kid and I watched Meryl Streep on TV. Mm-hmm. And it's actually one of the reasons I think I wanted to be an actress, because she's a brilliant actress. But then when I saw her in Congress and how they changed the laws about toxins on apples, you know, there was this whole thing about the toxins in pesticides. And I was like, you can be an actor and be smart and help incite change for everybody, you know? And it doesn't even just have to be related to your work. I've been incredibly lucky that, like, with incarceration and undocumented people, I probably would not have been called to do that work because I felt I would feel like, well, I don't know enough about those worlds, and I wasn't called to, as much as I knew that there was outrageous injustice in both of those areas.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't like I had a little bit of who am I to take action there. But then when Orange came, I felt called to take action. So I think a lot of it, back to that pause, is taking the time in your life to like pause and go, where am I called?
Yes.
Where am I called as an artist, and where am I called as an activist? And sometimes they, you know, come together in a magical way. And sometimes I do feel like you might be called as a activist and then it might feed your art, you know?
Yes. I think it actually does work that way. And I think so many people tell themselves the lie that kind of how we started the conversation of, once I get where I want to get, once I have more money, once I'm more famous, once I have a bigger platform, then I'll do the activism. But it's kind of, it's exactly what you're saying, is you take the stand to be who you care about being on the planet in a way that is of service, and watch how the art will attract to that flame.
I so believe that. And I can tell you actually a great story that I just found out last week. When I first moved to New York, one of the ways I did service was I became an AIDS educator for Viacom, which I don't think I got paid for. I just was like, at that moment, they were looking for that. And I was like, oh, that's an easy way to be of service. And like, what a cool skill to learn to be an art, like an educator about that, because then you can tell them, anyway. Sorry. I told my cute husband.
Divine calling.
Yeah, that was my cute husband. And we decided, David actually, I was talking about him and he had to like pop up. David and I decided with another couple of actors to do a showcase, and that we would give all the money back to Broadway Cares, Equity Fights AIDS. And we did it like to serve our souls as artists, because we wanted to make our own stuff and like not wait, create. But we also, and then we did it for Broadway Cares, Equity Fights AIDS. And I was at an opening of a play last week at Playwrights Horizons, which you guys should see, which is The Wives. If you guys get back
I've
here.
I've heard about this magic, yes.
I have two dear friends in it. My friend Porva Beatty, who's a brilliant actress, and Adia, also Beatty. They are not related, who I just did a play with at EST. And they're both brilliant in it, and everybody's brilliant in it, and it's so good. So I was at the opening, and I was talking to the casting director of Playwrights, who... I did not know this, came to that tiny showcase back when I was like 24, and said like, oh yes, that's when I first saw you, and was like, oh my God, she's amazing.
Oh,
no idea she was even there.
Yeah.
And she was like, yeah. And I asked around like, who represents you? And nobody did. Like, I basically couldn't find you.
Wow. So I have two questions for you. Number one, what is calling on your heart now as your leading edge of growth, your leading edge of activism and art and all the things that are really calling and talking to you? And question number two is, and what advice would you give anyone else anywhere on this path?
Yes, I had that same question.
And I know.
Thanks. Calling on my heart, you know, I feel deeply clear. However, I can tell stories that serve and that like open people's hearts. And in this moment, the oneness, I'm very connected to the oneness of us all, that we are all one, that we are all part of this like same organism, like one big organism that is this planet. And however we can listen to each other more and love each other more. Like, I just want to tell those stories. And sometimes that means being super, like, in the story, we're super mean to each other as an example of how that doesn't work. Like, it doesn't mean we're just going to be airy-fairy stories from now on. Like, sometimes we tell the best stories by telling, like, horrifically violent, ugly people and see that that's not really working for them, you know?
Yes, yes, exactly. So
it can, it doesn't mean, like, all happy, happy, joy, joy all the time. It just means how can we tell stories that remind people to love each other up and that we are all one.
Yeah.
So that's like my joy. And I have a bunch of like fun projects that I'm playing with in the playground to do that. That I'm like that are self-created and, or, you know, I hate self, like, that are co-created with universe and with like lots of other fun artists. And then, including one that I'm really excited about that I'm shooting like a little proof of concept of in, like 2 weeks. In LA. I'll be in LA October 15th. If you guys are still going to be there.
I will be here.
Okay, good.
You can be the stand-in, Natalie, because I will not be here. Yeah, come here. Hang out with Kristen.
Okay. And then in reference to like advice, I would say listen to your podcast. Like, you guys are so much better at advice than I. Like, I just know how to wake up every. I know that it takes a lot of tools to stay present for me. You know, for example, when I was listening to last week's podcast, one of the things I wrote down was like, have a calendar of receiving.
Mm.
Talked about receiving, and I was like, it would be really cool to create like a little calendar and like every day to cross off and be like, okay, I'm open to receiving today. Because my truth is, we forget these tools on a daily basis, and it's very easy to get hooked into the FOMO and hooked into our screens and hooked into what everybody else is doing and feeling like the not enoughness and those dark forces for me. Like, and so I need daily tools. I think that's my biggest piece of advice, is have a toolkit.
Mm.
Have a big, juicy toolkit. So you have lots of tools. Cause some days you'll want to listen to a podcast, and some days you'll want to listen to music and take a bath. And some days you'll want to, you know, like whatever. For those of you who don't have alcohol problems, maybe it's a martini. Like, it's, you know, some days it's a pastry, whatever. Like, depending on you and what feels like love and feels mm-hmm. like creativity and service to you is. And everybody's toolkit is going to be deeply unique to them. Just like, we are all these, you know, we are all the only definition in the dictionary. Like, you're the only Kristen in the dictionary. You're the only Natalie in the dictionary. I'm the only Alicia in the dictionary, you know? So everybody just, you know, my favorite kind of doctors are the doctors who prescribe just like specific to you, not like everybody needs the same thing.
Yes, that's it. And I love how you talked about giving service to yourself. I love what a part services of your life and how mm-hmm. you are of service in your art. And I think that's so incredible. And that's such a helpful tool, because it does help us get out of our ego and takes what we have and makes it a gift to the world. Mm-hmm. But I love that you talk about how can we be in service to ourselves. So seeing, like, almost as if I'm seeing Kristen as this being on the planet, and how can I make her feel loved and cared for? And I just think that's a really fun way of framing it.
And I actually think it points to, because we've gotten so disconnected from knowing how to love and nurture ourselves, it makes us have a separation with loving and nurturing others. And when we start to reclaim our worthiness of love and our ability to give love and genuine care to ourselves, all we will want to do is then extend that outward. All we will want to do is say, and we're all one. And no matter what color you are, or, you know, who you want to marry, or what is going on with you, like, we're the same thing, all cut up in different bodies. And I can't let something happen to you, because I know if I do, it's also happening to me.
Yeah. And I think one of the reasons I love listening to you guys is you have that core of self-love, and it's something I need. Like, I want to cop to, I kind of suck at self. Like, I've gotten better, but self-care and self-love is so much easier for me to go help somebody else. And it feels really good too, you know, like, and to me that does help me, you know, like going and helping our undocumented family, or being a great mom, or, like, you know, cooking for 25 people, whatever, feels so good. It's very scary to be like, to just take care of me. That's the most uncomfortable. And it's funny because, you know, right before the call, I was like, I picked cards for you. I also picked the self-love card.
Oh.
I kind of forgot it. I don't know if I forgot about it, or I was like, oh, I don't have to, like, that's too dangerous. You know, like, yeah. Self-love still can feel a little dangerous.
Yes. What do you think is the fear on the other side of self-love?
Narcissism.
Right, a deep fear of falling into a narcissism hole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
Like selfishness. I think that's the fear.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think there's especially a thing for women that we were brought up to be maternal, to be caretakers, all of these things.
To be martyrs and overgivers, and
with the societal idea that the worst thing we could ever be is selfish.
Yeah.
And so to come back and say, actually, there's this divine feminine movement happening now on the planet, and it's happening because women are rising and they're stepping into places of power, and they're letting their ideas be known, and they're learning how to love each other and raise each other. And this is ushering in a new level of healing on the planet. And we can only do it if we love ourselves first and allow ourselves to blossom, which can allow this movement to blossom. So I think there's a way that even the self-love becomes of service to the whole, because we are all connected.
Yeah.
Totally. And so I have two feelings about that. One is, I think the power of having, like, there is a deep magic and power and energy in having buddies, to, like, that you guys have each other, and, like, the buddy system of self-care and self-love. Like, I think that's something people should learn from. And I'm like, as I'm saying that, I'm like, oh, I should find a buddy for that. And one thing, sometimes when I'm speaking, when I'm, like, doing a keynote, or when I'm speaking about women's empowerment, I talk about, if you can't find a mentor, because I could never find a mentor, find a group and mentor each other. Like, be like, even if you don't have to find someone more fancy than you, you can all mentor each other. Like, find a love group and mentor each other into self-love. The other piece that there was an amazing, I'm a founding member of Time's Up, and we had this amazing meeting last week, and it was all these women told their stories about, from all different industries, of what it is to be a woman in their worlds. And there were some uncomfortable stories, to say the least.
Sure.
And one of the binaries was either you should be grateful. Like, you should be grateful that you are even, that we've even hired a woman, and like sort of turning gratitude into this negative thing. Or you're greedy. Like, if you want more, you're greedy. And it was so fascinating how men in different industries had made this binary of you should just be grateful or you're greedy, and there's no place in between, like be grateful or greedy. And part of my spiritual light, like part of my growth, is breaking both of those, that I can be grateful and want more. You know, like it's really okay to be like super grateful and joyful about where I am and want more. Like there is nothing wrong with that.
I think that's so spiritual. I think that's what we're called to be, is so grateful for what we have and so excited about the more, because we're ever expanding people. And so that desire for the more is spirit itself. It's the calling. And we are not supposed to deny that calling anymore. I think there was a lot of repression that came from feeling that call for more and feeling like it was wrong and we had to turn down the volume on it. And in so we turn the volume down on our voice.
Yeah. And it feels very like virgin whore-y, you know, like that.
Binary.
Like, no, yeah. And
black and white thinking.
No, like, no.
Uh-uh. We get to say.
Yeah.
Do you want to do something so fun?
Yeah.
I'm going to put Kristen also on the spot. We're going to go back and forth and we're going to do a speed round.
Ooh, okay.
So we're just going to ask you random questions. First thing that comes out of your mind, first thing that comes out of your mouth, speed round of joy.
Okay. We'll put the timer on. Give me a timer.
We're making this game up on the spot. I feel like this is our version of being on the playground right now, and I just want to play with it.
Okay, I think you want
James. It's the James Lipton, your version of the James Lipton.
Yes, totally.
Are we doing, let's do one, let's see what happens in 1 minute.
Okay, ready?
Okay, ready? Go.
Favorite color?
Rainbow.
Favorite animal?
Cheetah.
Favorite spiritual tool?
You.
What makes you feel sexy?
David Allen Beige.
Favorite show on television right now?
Fleabag. I think Fleabag. Yeah.
The last time you were inspired?
Right now.
Go!
Where on vacation the most in the whole world?
Where I want to go?
Yeah.
Tibet. And Bhutan.
Favorite childhood memory?
Oh, Fire Island. Like, but it's, I get to go there all the time now. So it's like, I live my favorite childhood memory almost every weekend.
And what is your ultimate hope for the future?
My ultimate hope for the future? World peace, and that like we all, like some magic happens and like an alien race sprinkles like amazing fairy dust on us and we all understand our oneness and the importance of the planet, and we like love each other and our planet in a way that we haven't conceptualized in this moment yet.
Oh, I hold that vision to my heart. And I say, and so it is.
And so it is. That was a fun speed round.
That was great.
That was really fun.
Well done. I love playing with you so much.
I love playing with you guys.
You're so beautiful, and you're so filled with light. And I just love the creativity that bursts out of your body. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us. I know that you've been of service through this podcast to so many people.
And I want to say too, thank you so much for being an example of wholeness in your expression, that none of us have to pick and choose. I'm an actor. I only am an actor. I'm a producer. I'm only a producer. I'm a mom. I'm only a mom. I do spiritual stuff that doesn't have anything to do with anything else. Thank you so much for showing us a real life example of what integration looks like.
And right back at both of you. And I can't wait to hang in IRL. I feel like I want to, like, we should, I want to have like a create retreat in Fire Island.
Let's do it. People are going to be wanting to sign up before we, as soon as we post this.
Let's do it. Okay.
All right. We love you so much.
Thank you so much.
Can't wait to see you here and there.
Yay!
Thank you so much for listening. We love to feel like we have friends all over the world in you who are committed to doing their dream on the planet.
And if you liked this podcast and you want to find out more about what we're doing or who we are, our pop-up classes, our online classes, you can check all of that out at thecreateseries.com.
And if you want to be part of our Facebook community, you can go to the Create Community page. That's C.R.E.A.P.E.Community.
And if you loved this podcast, why not share it with a friend?